Welcome to the Fuller Money Audio Commentary. This is David Fuller on Friday, the 2nd of February, recording at 9 p.m. Greenwich Mean Time. Now, this being Friday, this is the big picture long-term outlook for the various asset classes. But first, a quick review of the week. And my goodness, what a week it was. First, stock markets ended the week on quite a strong footing over Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday. Some of them breaking up out of the ranging patterns that have dominated most recent activity, main exception being China, which continued to weaken. And government bonds steadied a little bit, JGBs accepted. And the U.S. dollar, well, started the week firm, got clipped on Wednesday, and regained part of that decline, particularly today. Precious metals roared into the week, got pegged and through the week until today, when they were pegged back fairly sharply. And crude oil. The bear squeeze continues. This is trading after hours, right at the, the high of the day, not quite the high of the day, but up 182 at 59.12. Industrial metals, copper resumed its decline after a brief dead cat bounce, and dead cat bounce of about a fortnight, I think. Tin, strong. Mostly a little bit easier in the other metals. And soybeans has been the steadiest of the grain and bean complex and broke up out of a consolidation pattern here today. Okay, so what's going on and where are we in terms of the scheme of things? Well, I've been maintaining for some time that for stock markets, the risk that we faced and what we were seeing for many markets, not all, but was a bit of ranging. I've described it as a ranging reaction environment, small reactions, not big reactions, and within the overall upward trends that we see for stock markets in what is generally a benign seasonal period, and without any obvious risks on the horizon. Now, I know there's been a fair amount of worry in the background, but that's more often than not the wall of worry that people talk about. In other words, people have been worrying about wars in the Middle East, and they've been worrying about hard landings in the U.S., and you know, these things sort of rotate through, but none of them are proving to be a serious problem, evidenced by the trending action that we continue to see in stock markets. Now, markets are going to do, in all probability, one of two things. Well, they can do three things, of course. They can go up, sideways, or down, and not necessarily in that order. So, what are the two things that they're most likely to do? And that's to go sideways, to higher in here. Now, if they spend more time going sideways, that will actually reduce the risk, provided they don't break the series of higher reaction lows that we've seen in recent months. Actually, we've seen them for a number of months. We've seen them really since the July reaction, which tested the June lows. So in other words, most of the markets have had these steadily trending upwards patterns characterized by, or the defining characteristic of which is the rising lows. So as long as those are not clearly broken by a number of leading stock markets, and there's no threat of that at the moment, then we're more likely to see sideways to a higher ranging, a consistent trend is still a trend in motion, as I say at the chart seminar. Now, the point I was going to make, though, is if they spend more time ranging sideways in a reasonably steady fashion, that will be a consolidation, and it will cause a bit more mean reversion in terms of their 40-week moving averages. And that would correct the short-term overbought, and overextended conditions. On the other hand, if animal spirits run strong and markets surge ahead, and it matters less what happens in thin Eastern European markets or very thin Asian markets, I'm talking about the major markets. If Wall Street races ahead, if the European markets race ahead, if a number of the bigger Asian markets race ahead, then that would set markets up for another medium-term correction in that April. My guess is that the danger period would commence in April and run through to October. Doesn't mean we'd see a decline throughout that period, but the risk of a correction would be higher. I think you get the point. Now, on a longer term basis, well, I should say that overall, I expect 2007 to be an up year for most stock markets, and certainly any of the ones that I'm interested in. And I would expect those gains to roll on into 2008. And I don't really see anything worse on the horizon at this stage than another medium-term correction. Now, what might trigger that medium-term correction? Well, vertigo, the markets run ahead too quickly, get into a less hospitable period seasonally. The oil price, this is going to catch a lot of people by surprise. At this rate of momentum, we're going to see crude back above $60. Next week. That's not panic stations here, but remember, what were they expecting? And I think a lot of people were expecting $40 a barrel, so they're going to have to adjust to this higher oil price. Government bond yields have moved upwards in recent months. If that continues, and it would against a background of strongly rallying stock markets, then people are going to start to fret about inflationary pressures and higher interest rates. And that would cause problems for the stock markets. None of these is going eyeball to eyeball with investor sentiment at the moment, although the first one that's likely to do that now is oil. Just how quickly things can change. Just really a little over 2 weeks, and we see this snap back from that $50 reaction low really quite strongly. And I maintain that oil is in a secular bull market and that we almost certainly saw the low at 50 or just below 50 in January. Now, on a longer-term basis, again, we have this global economy synchronized in a period of expansion. That's good, provided it doesn't overheat too much, and measures have been taken to slow some economies down, and that's likely to have some effect. I think we could actually not only get through 2007 without any greater risk than a medium-term correction, which need not be too severe. Certainly, I don't see a bear market on the horizon. And with a little luck, that means no traumatic events, no new wars, and so on. We could get right into well into 2009 and perhaps 2010 before the risks picked up quite a bit. But that's a long way off, and we can't be precise about that at this time, obviously. So what will do best? Well, I think it'll continue to be emerging markets. I think it will be Japan among the developed markets. I see no evidence that the European advance is over, the developed European markets. And I see no evidence that Wall Street's run is over. Wall Street's really doing quite well in here. And remember the Wall Street leash effect. Are there bubbles? Well, certainly not among those markets. We've seen a minor bubble in China. And if you saw Owen's charts, I think it was yesterday or the day before, when he put up that chart of the PE ratio for the Shanghai index, that puts it in perspective. China does get bubbles. It's usually when that index is over 50 times earnings, and it got up into the mid-30s. So bigger bubbles, to say, are usually over 50 times. But no doubt, we saw by China standards a minor bubble, and that's why it's underperforming right now. There is no really big bubble out there. We haven't seen one of those since the Middle East oil producers last year, and that peaked, and they've come back a long, long way and are probably quite close to sustainable floors. Now, we have to be careful with some of the thin emerging markets. Eastern European markets spring to mind. Some of the thin Asian markets, Indonesia, Philippines, because I suspect that one of the reasons these are doing so well is because there are, I don't think it's vast amounts of speculation by locals, but because you'll have funds which invest in those markets and those thin markets, and those funds are doing well. And so their performance attracts new money, which then contributes to the self-feeding uptrend. As more people go in, the uptrend goes higher, the performance gets better, and begetting more demand, and so on. Now, the trouble starts when Wall Street gets into trouble, and then the leash effect will kick into reverse, and we'll see those markets pulled back down very, very sharply. So bottom line, I wouldn't chase any of these runaway uptrends. Some of the comparative wallflowers, again, I mentioned Japan, well, I'll just mention it again. It's a good candidate to have a major upside move this year. And we're quite close to a breakout point on the upside for both the Nikkei and also for the topics index. Now, what else? I should move on to bonds, government bonds now. People have been saying they're a little bit oversold. I agree, except for the JGBs, which I regard as a short. We may see a technical rally in some of the other government bond prices, and that, though, will quite likely create another selling opportunity. We're going to see global GDP growth continue, and it's going to be, I think, reasonably strong. And the U.S. economy, I think the soft landing scenario, which I've been forecasting all along, is almost certainly the outcome that we're likely to get here. So that's not a great environment for government bonds. We're not going to get a lot of interest rate cuts. We may get some more interest rate hikes. And when the global economy is synchronized in a period of economic expansion, inflationary pressures will pick up again. Now, a lot of people are pointing out that, and including the Fed, that inflationary pressures are moderate. Yes, that reflects the low oil prices, that we saw a little bit of economic slowdown, but I'm looking ahead now. Those inflationary pressures are likely to be picking up again, and we'll see that, if not by the end of this quarter, certainly in the second quarter of the year, would be my guess. So that's not a favorable environment for government bonds. And on a long-term basis, I maintain that the secular bear market for government bonds began back in June 2003. for evidence, go into the library and look at the monthly charts for yields. You'll see a predominance of developing base formations, and look at the monthly charts in terms of futures prices, and you will see some fairly large type 3, some very large type 3 tops to support my hypothesis that a secular bear market gradually unfolding, they're usually slow in the beginning, hardly anyone notices, but that's the environment that we have. Okay, as far as currencies are concerned, you've heard it before, no country wants a strong currency. We'll get mostly ranging, only some countries want and need a weaker currency more than others, and the US is certainly within that group. And I think I said earlier in the week that one of the reasons why the Fed came out with that benign statement is that they don't want to be talking the dollar up. They'd like to see the dollar stay range bound, but more on the lower side of that range than on the upper side of the range. The yen carry trade, well, you know, people have been burying this for years, and it hasn't happened. It ain't over till it's over, and the charts don't suggest to me that it's over, and it probably won't be over until the Japanese want it to be over, and I'm hard-pressed to make a strong case as to why the Japanese would want the yen carry trade to be over at any time soon. Their problem has been deflation. They have a history of struggling with a strong currency in the 1990s. Particularly in the first half of that decade, they want to see a soft currency which helps their exports into Asia as well as the US, but the Asian exports are the more important ones now. And of course, they are very keen to increase GDP growth in their economy, and so the soft yen increases earnings when they are consolidated, brought back, converted into yen. So I see this situation continuing for a while longer. Now, if no country wants a strong currency, it's just a matter of degree, that is the fundamental economic background for this long-term bull market in precious metals. They will be choppy from time to time, inevitably, but anybody who has bought them after reactions, after corrections, rather than chasing the stronger rallies, has done pretty well in these precious metal markets, and I think that will continue to be the case. Despite today's setback, we've seen a lot of technical improvement in here this week, and today's setback, maybe it holds up the advance or we get a little bit more consolidation around current levels, but the picture is really still quite favorable in my view. Now, in terms of industrial metals, the copper situation is fascinating. I'm posting a report today, I haven't done it yet, but it says that there's up to 1 million tons of copper in terms of short positions right now. And that's at a time when China's been running down its inventories. So the type of rebound you're seeing in oil right now, that quick move from 50 back up to over 59 here today, that's going to take place in copper before long, only it will be sharper. And having seen the dead cat bounce, then copper weakening, is quite weak in here today, down over 10 cents, that suggests to me that this move is becoming climactic. And watch for a bear squeeze. That will be interesting. That, incidentally, I think will put a fire under the industrial metals sector, and I'm getting ready to top up my my positions there. I pulled off a little bit of capital that I'll be channeling into investment positions there. I might go for the Merrill Lynch World Mining Trust. I might go for BHP Billiton. I might go for I might go for Rio Tinto. I like them. I like them all. I might go for one of the shares because it's a little bit easier for me to play the Merrill Lynch World Mining Fund by the spread bet route. But I've been nibbling away at that sector on weakness, and I'm going to do a little bit more. I'm happy to tell you that in advance for my investment portfolio. Now, what else to mention in here? Crude oil, I did say, have talked about the rebound that we have seen, and the rebound on the charts constitutes a downside failure. And that really does convince me that my earlier hypothesis of support building, base building here is taking place. What we've seen is that drop down that forms that spike low, or if we get some ranging in the 60s, which could quite easily take place, then people will start to describe it as an inverse head and shoulders bottom. I don't go in for jargon, but I'm just saying what people will be calling it. And they can call it whatever they like. It'll be a base formation. But, and this depends on the size of the short position. And if that short position is very large, and it might be, then the price of crude just keeps going on up. And we could get from in that situation, and say it depends entirely on the size of the short position, in my view, we could see copper, I beg your pardon, oil move towards the $65-$70 level as quickly as it's moved up from the $50 level. And that would obviously have implications for other markets. But again, that fundamental background, steadily rising demand and the supply. Okay, there's capacity around, spare capacity around in OPEC. They might be less eager to throw that back onto the market. In other words, they might try to nurture this current rally. And overall, this is in a secular bull market, as are all industrial commodities. The grain and bean complex, this is a dull period seasonally, but global reserves are low. A dull period seasonally in the sense that we're not facing major crop news here right now. That will start to change as we get into the North American spring, sort of from March onwards, and late March onwards. And so against that background of rather low reserves and increasing global demand, any adverse weather conditions can really cause a number of these resources to spike. And of course, there's also the the channeling of corn, no matter, never mind that that's rather uneconomic in terms of making ethanol out of corn. That's a political decision, and that political decision will be just that much stronger if the oil price is appreciating, and therefore that's just adding to the shortages that we're seeing in some of these agricultural commodities. And I think that's a wrap. And I don't know about you, but this has been such an exciting week, too exciting, at least today, too exciting for me. So I'm going to spend more time with my family. I'm going to cycle. I'm going to read a good novel that I've got going, and I'm going to maybe watch some of the rugby and perhaps even the Super Bowl. And whatever you're doing, I hope it's absolutely delightful. More on Monday. All the best.